Hey everyone, and welcome to this second edition of the Risky Business Soapbox podcast series. I'm Patrick Gray. The idea behind these all-sponsored podcasts is to talk turkey with vendors about their tech, their roadmap, the threats they're trying to address, and how they see those threats, all of that good stuff. And really the idea here is to have that conversation without it being awfully boring, as it too often is. We did one of these soapbox specials already with HPE Enterprise about a month ago or so. That was with the head of the Fortify division, and we were speaking about DevOps. That was all good stuff. We got another one coming up next month with Bromium talking about micro virtualization. If you want to do one of these, do email sales@risky.biz. But yeah, today's edition of the Soapbox podcast belongs to Senryo. Senryo is a new-ish company. You can check out their website at iot.security. But yeah, Senryo has interesting tech and an interesting founder. And I mean, the pitch is just, we do IoT security stuff. But honestly, it's the details of what Senryo is doing that are really interesting. Senryo was founded by industry legend Stephen Ridley. Now, Stephen knows an awful lot about hacking embedded devices, so much so that he actually used to train NSA staff on how to exploit IoT vulnerabilities. Now, when you're being asked by NSA to teach them how to own stuff, well, I'm pretty sure that makes you an expert on owning said stuff. But like John Oberhide and Doug Song with Duo Security and Haroon Mir with Thinkst Canary, Stephen set out some time ago to jump from the offensive side of InfoSec to the defensive side. And the result is Senryo, which is essentially an ecosystem-wide IoT security play. They've built a network sensor designed specifically to detect and inventory IoT devices on networks, but it also detects when something's gone wrong with a device on your network and sends you alerts either through an API to your SIEM or through its own web interface. It is a cloud service, or even right to the iOS app or Android apps they've built for it. So, you know, that's cool. It's pretty much just apt get install Senryo onto a box that you plug into a SPAN port on a switch somewhere. That's really easy. While that's the side of their technology that's going to make them a lot of money right off the bat, Senryo has actually built some monitoring tools also for IoT developers. And that is the more academically interesting aspect of what they've done. There's so much potential for that side of Senryo's business to be picked up far and wide in coming years. And it's really, really interesting tech. The way they've done this is very, very cool. So, you know, basically you can bake Senryo's developer stuff into your IoT devices and use it to monitor your devices once they're in the field. And you can get surprisingly granular with how detailed you can go in monitoring those devices in the field. So in this podcast, we'll be talking about Senryo's tech, both the network side, which will be interesting for CISOs in IoT heavy environments like hospitals, but we'll also talk about the developer tools side. Senryo founder Stephen Ridley joined me, as did Jamison Utter, Senryo's VP of Field Operations. And what we've done for this podcast is kind of narrowed the focus to the most important IoTs, which are medical devices, both on the network side and the developer tool side. So if you're a CISO from a hospital, you really, really should keep listening to this podcast. And also if you're a developer of medical devices or other critically important IoT, again, you should really keep listening to this. I should point out too that a lot of smart money has gone into Senryo. Mark Dowd and Halvar Flake are both investors in Senryo, and they're both happy for me to say so. So this gives you an idea of how seriously security people take Stephen and this company, Senryo. So yeah, this podcast is basically talking about what Senryo's done, and maybe more importantly, why they've done things the way they've done them. So even if you're not someone who's likely to want to buy their stuff, I think you'll probably find this podcast quite interesting. So I started off by asking Jamison Utter why the world actually needs an IoT security company when there are already so many vendors out there that handle network device security. Here's what he said.
Most people look at the IoT as more of what we already have, right? Like they look at network monitoring and security application as, you know, the standard PC. I detect a problem, I quarantine you, I log in and fix it. I have a server that has, you know, a database on it. I have a certain way of looking at that and monitoring it. But the IoT is none of the above. You cannot log into it. You cannot put agents on it. Most of the time, you can't scan it, right? These devices are holistically different than anything we've ever encountered in security before. But we're trying to retrofit this security model of a PC onto a device. It doesn't work at all, right? And everybody says the future of IoT is coming. Well, they're wrong. There are actually more IoT devices today than computers, than even phones, right? So we're already there, much less where we're going to be. So I got interested in it because I saw this gap in, like, I was working for a company that said, hey, we can cover the IoT, right? And I was like, yeah, we don't do that.
You just couldn't quite drink the Kool-Aid.
Yeah, I was like, there are things we can do from a DNS perspective to help IoT. Sure, you know, I can block mirror addresses and, you know, like, but that's just not really an approach that is scalable and appropriate for the business model of IoT. And as I studied IoT more, and that's where Steven and I started getting hip to each other, was I was like, look, this technology is not just disruptive. It is new. We have not experienced this in networking since the PC, right? Mm. Like we there was this revolution of connectivity, and then kind of Wi-Fi kind of gave us another one, right? Because suddenly there were no boundaries. Now IoT is so fundamentally different that we're trying to retrofit these ideas that are 20 years old about security onto a technology that is designed to communicate, exchange data, be open. Like, that's the whole point of IoT. The business value is in that.
It's funny too, right? Because I remember in previous discussions that we've had, you were talking about how, like, SIEM vendors are like, yeah, we want to do stuff with IoT. And it's like, oh shit, these things don't actually create logs. Do you know what I mean? Like, something something as simple as that. Like, you can't get SNMP information out of a heart rate monitor, right?
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So that was why I joined the company, as I was like, look, nobody's addressing this properly. Steven and I talked and I was like, holy crap. Like, that's the way. Because,
and Steven, I want to ask you, all right, because I mean, you're known as being one of the world's foremost experts in embedded device exploitation. You know, I mean, I've been following your work for years. Why did you decide to jump into the defensive side of it? I mean, I'm guessing it's because you looked at it and just saw everyone was kind of doing it wrong.
I'd say that really my choice to kind of go into the embedded space and productize around kind of IoT embedded security is just because of what we saw as service, like in the services world. We would get contracted by companies who, you know, were bringing new products to market, really well-established vendors, like makers of not just IoT devices, but also, you know, leading manufacturers of mobile phones would bring us in to take a look at devices. And, you know, all, you know, across the broad range of devices that we looked at, the vulnerabilities were largely super simple, like really easy to exploit, or they weren't even like vulnerabilities. They were like implementation bugs, like forced browsing to a page that you weren't supposed to get to pre-auth. Just really stupid, simple vulnerabilities in really like high value, really ubiquitous devices. And for me, that was like an aha moment, like just constantly seeing how vulnerable all these devices were. We did some work with a company that is a gaming company, and not like a gaming like set top, you know, sit at home on your couch.
No, you mean like a put your pension money into this machine and, you know, you maybe you'll win a peanut, you know, those sort of machines, right?
That's right. So not just casino machines, but also like the automation systems for like state lottery systems, right? Ooh. So there's like, and these systems are just as bad as your average webcam purchased from like Best Buy.
Yeah, right.
So we would see these things, or like industrial controllers, we'd look at these things and just be like, is this really the world we live in? This can't be how things actually work. And that really is kind of where we started thinking about, what are some secure design patterns? What are some ways that we could give manufacturers across these different market segments something to work with? And that's the challenge of the IoT and security in embedded devices in general, is just that lack of homogeneity, right? Like every device, it has a different hardware stack, different software stack. Some are running, you know, bare metal firmware. Some are using multi-user operating systems like Linux. Some are using kind of a hybrid of the two of those, which are like real-time operating systems. So, you know, what's the, like the traditional, as Jameson was saying, the traditional model does not apply. And so that was a challenge for us as researchers, like what's something we could do to raise the bar? And that's really ultimately became the Senreo product.
Careful, Stephen, you said raise the bar, and that is the first square on the risky business bullshit bingo card mark. So I'm just, this is your first warning. But it's funny, right? Because like I know you, and you're into the heavy science of security. So you guys have created some really genuinely interesting tools for IoT developers. But we'll get to that in a minute, because on the other hand, we got Jamison here, who I can see twitching because he's like, talk about the hospitals, right? Because, you know, one of the most obvious applications, like for a network-based approach to just assisting people who are operating IoT-heavy environments like hospitals, dealing with heart rate monitors, insulin pumps, like all of these little bits and pieces that are around there. You know, I mean, they've got some serious issues worrying about those fleets, because InfoSec companies don't really know much about the challenges in those environments. Like, in the middle of surgery, you can't quarantine a heart rate monitor. It doesn't work. I mean, I had an interesting conversation with Jamison about this the other day. But Jamison, I mean, essentially, it seems like you guys have created a network IoT security platform for hospitals, just because it's there's a clear need there, and it's an easy win for you, right?
Well, I feel like of the industries that are adopting IoT today, hospitals are actually way ahead of everybody else in adoption. And it was driven by necessity. You know, the Digital Records Acts in America, you know, there's a lot of digitization of information, and sharing of that information can make a procedure better, right? When the heart monitor is talking to the drug pump that's talking to something else, that's, you know, it's part of an ecosystem that actually improves your health. These things are all drivers for technology development. And then again, as those things are continue to be more efficient, the way only computers can do, they're also economic drivers for a hospital, right? So I can make sure I'm utilizing my tools the right way. Is my $10,000 urine pump being used, or my $13 million MRI machine? Are they being used the right way, enough, efficiently, generating revenue, right? So that business understood IoT before it was called IoT, right? So they have deep adoption already of devices that are highly mobile, unconnected, they can't take clients. Like, all the things we would say about IoT has been true in medical devices for a while. So for us, that was a natural marriage. When I looked at other industries, obviously ICS is deep, same thing there in industrial control. But when I look at other industries, they're learning IoT.
Medicine's trying to get ICS, you know, ICS, the people who manage ICS deployments to actually do something like this is actually a little bit harder. And I mean, one thing, you and I spoke about this the other day, but the FDA has actually recommended that hospitals, you know, find a way to manage the IoT security risk of their devices, which means, you know, if something does go wrong, there could be a lawsuit. So the compliance departments, the legal departments of hospitals are starting to get onto this. And yet, when they go and look at some, you know, traditional passive, you know, network scanners that are trying to do some IoT stuff, often they're doing deep packet inspection, which under HIPAA is a no-no in a lot of cases, right? Or it's not entirely clear or whatever, but that's a whole other compliance headache. So that's why you guys have created your network product, right?
Yeah, totally. Deep packet inspection in most cases violates HIPAA, because the HIPAA thing is about patient data. What is patient data? That's something I don't want to debate in a legal format with a lawyer, what that means. And so that's kind of been a driver there, as well as you mentioned the FDA compliance. They did an interesting thing by making it a recommendation and not a law, which meant that I have to defend it more strongly in court than if it's a law, right? If it's a law, I have to be at least so high to ride this ride. And if I do anything more, well, good for me. But if I do less, I can say if it was breached, well, I complied, right? But when I make it a recommendation, now the whole lawyers open up to the whole process. So from my talking to the providers and other things at these medical shows and things I've done, they're more scared of it being a recommendation than a law, right? Because it's so open to interpretation.
Okay, so what we're talking about here is something you can drop at the gateway. I understand it's very easy. You plug into a SPAN port. It's like APT, GET, Senrio, whatever. Off it goes. Steven's actually showed me the iOS app. So you can get like an alert when a new device gets plugged into the network. It's all very slick. It's all ready to ship. You know, that is fantastic. But I got to ask, how do you actually start? And this is one for you, Steven. How do you actually start to detect when, first of all, when something gets plugged in? I'm guessing that's pretty easy, because IoT, you know, callbacks and whatever are going to have pretty common characteristics. But how do you know when something on your network has gone wrong? How can you build a network sensor that's going to be able to tell you that?
It's really the thesis of the company really was that, and this is before we even spun it into a company, when we were developing the product and it's in our previous incarnation as a services company. And the thesis of the company is that metadata from embedded devices is enough to know about what the device is doing. And so that's kind of what we started with is like, can we collect device metadata just looking at, you know, packet headers, some lightweight data from like DNS requests, and some other little feature sets. Can we just look at that and get a good idea that the device is changing its behavior? And so, you know, we started going down that path and investigating, and it turned out that it is. That's all you really need. And the reason for that is, and I get back to the thesis of the company, is that embedded devices don't do a whole lot. So where, you know, you have a endpoint system like a laptop or a server or a PC or something, there's a user that's always doing something on that device that would be algorithmically considered fuzzy, right? So the user is installing software, they're connecting to completely new hosts every few minutes, every time they're, you know, clicking a new link to browse the web, that's a new destination on the internet that they're going to. But on embedded devices, that behavioral profile is a lot narrower. So in the case of a device that, for example, does only contact the internet, sure, it may be going to a lot of different hosts, a lot of 443, a lot of 80, but that's probably all that device is capable of doing is browsing the internet. It's not going to be making SSH connections, for example. It's not going to be running an SSH server, for example. So because of those things, and because of that kind of core thesis of the company, we're actually able to extract a lot of security value from just the monitoring piece of embedded devices.
And can so you, our so challenge- like with what degree of confidence can you say this packet that we've just seen fly past our gateway is this type of device? It is a heart rate monitor made by this company. Can you get that granular, or can you just say, oh, it's an IoT device?
Yeah, so in some cases, we can get that granular. The answer is yes to your question. But it what's really neat about Synreo, and this is one of the things that made us really excited early on, is that the Synreo backend, the whole system is kind of a learning platform. The system learns from new events. It learns from things that users do, the way people leverage our API. And so you get this, and this is, again, what was compelling to us, you get this network effect. So every new device that joins the Synreo platform makes it possible for the Synreo backend to identify and profile that device that much faster.
Yeah, I mean, we probably should have pointed out by now that this is a cloud platform, right? So, you know, you drop in a sensor at your gateway and it, you know, gathers information on IoT and it shunts it up into Senrio's, systems, and you get a really beautiful, pretty interface. Very Multigo inspired, actually, I've noticed the interface there. Yep. You know, you get your slick iOS apps and all of that good stuff. Now, look, okay, that is the network side of things. That is, okay, if you've got a problem, you need to identify problems with your IoT things without quarantining them and without doing DPI. Like, honestly, just go to senr.io and go have a look at their stuff, because as far as I know, there's nothing else that really quite does what you do. So that's great. IoT for hospitals. Done. Now, the thing that I know you're really excited about, Stephen, though, is not necessarily the network side of it, right? Because you are someone who's done a lot of exploitation of IoT. You like being deep in the weeds with these devices. And frankly, there's not many people who know these devices the same way you did. And you've actually created this whole other side to it. So we've seen a lot of news about the exploitability of medical devices and other things. And, you know, obviously in this podcast, we're talking a lot about medical devices because that's where the market is right now, okay?
Yep.
But you've created like these Synreo Trace, which is the carrot to get developers to use it, is that it's free, it gets you debugging, right? But then they basically, like if they use your developer tools for things, a whole bunch of your stuff gets compiled into that to that device, which then beacons out to your cloud service and provides telemetry on that device, which the creator of that device can then access if they want to by becoming a customer. Now, I know that's a whole bunch of dense information I've just put in there, right? But let's try to walk through it and explain it. So tell us about Synreo Trace, because I think it's pretty awesome.
Thank you. Yeah, Synreo Trace is the part that that definitely had me the most excited.
We're doing this by video, by the way. And now Stephen is smiling. I can just tell the listeners that he's into this.
Yeah, no, it's really cool because it's kind of the piece. And when I think about it, I think it's, you know, it's what a solution to IoT is going to look like. And, you know, obviously we hope it's us, but I think ultimately this will be a pattern that we see repeating in the industry for a while. So the way Synreo Trace works is it's essentially what we would call, as a security researcher, I would call lightweight function hit tracing. So as the firmware developer, I include the Senreo package in my firmware build. And essentially what the Senreo software does automatically, by just being included into the build process, is it is able to build a profile of execution of the firmware. So as the firmware is going about its just normal daily business, every so often Senreo is seeing what functions execute in the order that they execute in. And then every so often that Senreo code that does that that profiling sends that data out onto the network. Now it can send it locally on the network to be picked up by a Senreo Insight sensor, which is the piece that you were just talking about, the network monitoring piece. Or if there's no Senreo Insight, that data can be beaconed directly into a cloud instance. Then the firmware developer is able to, she's able to log into the web interface and just get not only runtime information about like what functions are executing and when, kind of the timing of functions, but also things that are really developer friendly, like debug output. So, you know, like Senreo printf will, you know, send a message back to the instance. So you can do things like debugging. And then the security piece that is really exciting is that the machine learning and the kind of the analytics platform that we've built for the network analysis is repurposed to actually tell you if the firmware is executing differently.
Yeah, so, right. Like this is where it gets really cool, right? So
yeah.
Say I manufacture, you know, like an implantable defibrillator that speaks to a base station at home, right? So right. If I'm the developer of that device, now I can take your stuff, include it in my project for the firmware on that nightstand, right? The firmware that communicates with the medical device. And that thing's just going to beacon back with, you know, I executed this function, this function, and this function, A to B to C, A to B to C, A to B to C.
Yep.
And you got like 50,000 of these things all beaconing back going A to B to C, A to B to C. And then all of a sudden, one of them goes A to B to X. And you go, oh, okay, something's just gone screwy. Now, the nice thing is, right, it also beacons back the firmware version. So you can say, you know, you can tell when patches don't stick. And of course, these guys at Senreo will actually work with vendors so that you can even get unique device IDs to beacon back. So this means you can do the whole Mrs. Jones, we're sending someone to your house to replace your, you know, bedside heart monitor. That's pretty awesome, right? Like I'm just super impressed by that. So, I mean, that's kind of the vision there, isn't it? It's just making all of that doable.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I mean, definitely the kind of the hypothetical you just mentioned. But what's exciting, too, is that we can, you know, we've had some cases where, you know, people would ask us trying to shoot holes in it. Well, what if the device that I want to do monitoring in has Bluetooth? Like, how will this give me visibility into the Bluetooth activity? I say, well, you can just add Senreo beacons to the Bluetooth dispatch functions in your firmware. Right. And then Senreo will know every time something in the firmware related to Bluetooth happens. So what we're seeing is like the capability is having a lot of applicability that we didn't initially plan. So that is always a really good sign about kind of the pattern that we've, you know, kind of built the software around.
Now, one thing we didn't mention there is you mentioned that you can do local beaconing on the network. But we haven't even mentioned yet that you've actually created a version of the analytics capture side that you can embed, that is in fact being embedded in like home Wi-Fi access points, right? And that even increases the amount of information because then, because you're on a local network, you can actually start capturing the timing between different function calls, right? And get really granular information that can then go back to the company that made the medical device. I mean, that's just, that's cool.
We're definitely excited about that. That's the Senreo Insight product that you're mentioning. We started off with that kind of just being a software only play. Hey, let's just, you know, make it so that we can double click install, turn a device or a laptop or server into a Senreo sensor to collect that network data, an apt-get install Senreo kind of deal. And we can deploy that way or in a VM or whatever. But what is exciting for us is to discover that our engine is so lean and that capture capability, because we don't need to do deep packet inspection, is so small and so fast that we can actually embed it into access points and do it on really low resource systems, like things with not very much CPU, not very much RAM. So our first customers actually are embedding the Synreo Insight capability into their access point to gain IoT visibility.
Stephen, obviously you're the tech brain, right? This is the stuff that you work on. Yeah, it's funny, right? Because you're probably going to make buttloads of money out of the hospital stuff. And you're just like, yeah, okay, we do network stuff. We solve that problem. But, you know, you get super excited talking about the actual, you know, developer tools side of it. But Jamison, what's the market like for this, right? Because it's... okay, you know, things, embedded devices, they're everywhere, right? Every single enterprise has this stuff, you know, in its environment. But what's the actual market like? Because there's not too many companies doing pure play IoT. So what are the conversations like that you have with the various groups, you know, whether they're companies that develop things or whether they're like hospitals that have to manage fleets of things? What are those conversations like? Where's the market maturity at in terms of understanding the risks and understanding the compliance and all of that?
I would say that varies a lot based on the vertical. So medical is acutely aware of the problems they have. Like, I was very heartened, honestly, as I got deeper and deeper into conversations at high levels in hospitals, that their key, like the number one thing they're after is patient safety. Like, that made me feel good, right? It wasn't just about money. It wasn't about compliance. It was actually about saving lives. So they're acutely aware of not just the risk, but the problem they have in managing those devices today, finding them, identifying them. Like, this is their key problem.
And how are they doing that now, right? Like, because they've got to be at least having a... yeah, well, that's the curious thing, right? I mean, are they at least having a stab at it using other tools?
Yeah. So I recently had a conference with a very large provider here in the United States that's a... I don't know what you call them at their level. Like, they own many hospitals and also help other hospitals operate, right? So we kind of HMO style provider. And they have a huge project underway, many millions of dollars to do device identification, provisioning, the whole bit, right? All around IoT. And they had brought in another extremely large name that you would know in standard networking and security to help them, and ended up throwing them out. Because their approach, this is a true story. I'm not saying any names because I don't want to, you know, narrow it down. Yeah. So what happened is they have a mock surgical room and all this stuff where they can simulate that something's going on, and they test devices here too, right? So this is like, does this pump work together with our other system? And does it, you know, like, this is their idea. It's kind of a lab, right? They had them in the lab doing all the network security and pieces they wanted to do for IoT in this place. And they intentionally malfunctioned some of the devices to test the security piece. The company quarantined them, knacked them, knocked them off the network, and they disconnected from the electronic record system. So they stopped talking to the ecosystem. Now, the devices and the makers are smart enough that the devices keep working, right? So if you had been in surgery, you would not have known what went wrong. It would be fine, right? You would not die. However, the key to why we have the network...
Hang on. Every time someone says, you would not die, however... you know, that just, that doesn't make you feel very comfortable. But anyway, please continue.
Yeah. So the key to them all being networked is really so that we gain additional value from cross communication, right? Like, the heart monitor is talking to the blood pump, that's talking to the drug pump. So everything's regulated. Nobody really has to make fine tunes. And the techs are used to this being like, this is how they're trained today. Yeah. So the med tech people are taught to make them work this way. They're expecting them to work this way. And what happened is, because it knocked it off the network, blocked its access, it went back into 1980 mode. This is what the quote, like, it went into 1980 mode, right? Where it's not connected devices. And he said, in the middle of the exercise, we just stopped and said, get out. Yeah. Because clearly that company didn't understand what we were trying to do.
Yeah.
Like, so that was a huge wake up call for me, that this giant networking security company was not listening to medical and what they were, what the business case was, not the problem. Right. They solved the problem. Yeah, we knacked it. We quarantined it. You're safe. But that busted the business case for why they networked it.
Yeah. So, I mean, what are the competing plays for this out there in the market? Like, what are you coming up against? Because I'm guessing, you know, I've seen the security sales. I've seen security sales in action, right? And people will bullshit in order to get the sales. Like, so what are you up against in terms of, like, who's going in there and sort of sweet talking and saying, we got this, who actually doesn't, you know? Like, what are the approaches that are currently being sold at the moment is the question.
I talk to lots of people and lots of customers, and what I'm seeing is the big boys preaching the same message they preach to PCs, right? It's the same.
Detect, quarantine, kickoff network, that sort of thing, right?
That's exactly it. Signatures and threat feeds. And I'm like, so maybe you have the best threat feed in the world. Maybe so, right? Let's assume that. Do you have analysts who watch devices, right? Yeah. Is there anybody in your place that knows the threat vector for a device? I'm sure they're the best analysts in the world, but that's a different threat model. It's a different people, right? So if you're using that method, there's a whole new bunch of questions to try to do, right? Like it's even harder. So what I keep hearing is this, like, we'll just solve it with the same old problems. And I'm like, but it's not the same old technology.
Like, yeah.
The model's different.
Yeah. To what Jameson said from the research side, kind of exploitation, exploit development side, that's exactly what makes IoT actually not sexy to security researchers, is because it's super easy to exploit these things, right? We're talking like...
But
like
it's kind of ironic, isn't it? That because it's easy to exploit and they're easy to own, they get less attention.
Yeah. So, well, you know, for like the security researchers, there's like very little challenge in it. So, and the reason is for this reason exactly. So when we were doing services work, looking at embedded devices, I'd say 60 to 70% of the vulnerabilities, critical high vulnerabilities in devices we looked at, like weren't even sexy remote code execution bugs. They're like, you know, instrumentation bugs. They left this debug service open that actually has root access and takes remote commands. Like really stupid, lame stuff is what's actually making its way to market. So as a security researcher who's looking for the next challenge, you know, IoT devices are easy. It's like, you know, it's like fighting toddlers or something. It's like really...
Do you often fight toddlers, Stephen?
He does.
Hey, if my wife hears this, she's going to be mad. We have a little one at home, so that's
the kind of goat. Yeah, no, look, I'm hearing you, you know, so it's interesting. Now, we should point out too that the trace stuff, I mean, there is a carrot there in that to use that, right, to get access to, you know, some nice, sweet, sweet debug outputs that might not necessarily be available to you otherwise. I mean, you can use all of that Senrio Trace stuff for free, right? It's only when you want to actually start monitoring your fleet of devices that you actually have to pay. So, I mean, you could make some shit vulnerable device, bake Trace into it, you know what I mean? And when the next Mirai comes, that's when you sign the check and actually log into the analytics platform and, you know, start monitoring patch levels and see which of your devices are hosed, right?
Yeah, and that's what informed the Senrio Trace approach. Just to go kind of back to my earlier point, is that we looked at the kind of vulnerabilities we were seeing. We were saying, well, you know what? Remote code execution is like maybe 40% of the bugs. Like, and of those 40%, it's like most of the ones that we actually wrote exploits for were ones we wanted to write exploit for. We probably had some other critical vulnerability that we didn't even need RCE for, right? So we looked at those kind of, and was like, if the vulnerabilities are this lame, then people who are selling IoT security from the hardened device standpoint, like securing the real-time operating system and doing ASLR and doing, NX and stuff like that, like doing these really advanced things on embedded devices, that's not going to solve the problem if someone just wrote some really crappy firmware that has like a remote root service that you can send commands to.
Yeah, or hard-coded creds a la Mirai, right? But the nice thing is, because as you've pointed out, you know, these things look they're very predictable on the network. So when they start acting up, they stick out like the dog's proverbials, as we say.
Exactly. And that's, and that informed the two approaches, the Senrio Insight approach, which is the network monitoring piece. This device is going to do something predictable the moment it does it. Or moment it doesn't, then, you know, we can let you know. And then the Senrio Trace piece, which is that, you know, again, the same premise, the firmware is going to execute most likely the same handful of ways, depending on what the device is doing. And the moment it does something out of the normal for its normal execution trace, you know, let the user know that something is up on that device.
Well, and it's easy to see too, if a one-off, you know, a one-off can be an anomaly, right? But the nice thing is if you're watching 100,000 devices in aggregate through your platform,
that's
you can
see
if you've got a big problem, right? And that's, you know,
that's exactly right.
That's worth it. I mean, if I'm the manufacturer of medical devices, I mean, I'm going to implement something like this. I don't know if I'm going to use your platform, but I'm guessing I can't see a reason not to, right? Because why reinvent that thing? you know, when Stephen right. Ridley's written one, right?
Yeah, and one thing we noticed too, and again, like this is why I get so, you know, light up about Senrio Trace, is that manufacturers have all these other problems too that we didn't know about until we started talking to people. Like manufacturers just don't know where their devices are, right? They don't know. I mean, maybe the system is designed to be a point-to-point system. They don't really get that, you know, real-time information from the device. Or maybe the device only reports information after it's done a certain amount of sensor data collection, right? They don't have that regular check-in of data. So, and all these manufacturers are recreating the same basic design patterns, which is, you know that remote publisher-subscriber model. So, like, we can take some of that stuff away and make that – and make basically help manufacturers speed to market, right? We can help them get to market faster by just giving them a suite of tools that, oh, by the way, also makes the firmware more secure, right? And that's what we really think is the most exciting about the Senrio products.
Well, there you go. It's got a bow on it. Stephen Ridley, Jamison Utter, thank you very much for joining us to have a bit of a chat. I mean, this feels like a launch, to be honest. It feels like a product launch for you guys, but that's all right, because it's good. It's all good stuff, and I hope some of the listeners out there got something out of that. Thank you very much, both of you, for joining us for this.
Awesome. Thank you. Thanks for having us.
Thanks, Patrick.
That was Stephen Ridley and Jamison Utter there from Senrio. If you want more information about their stuff, just head on over to iot.security to check out their stuff. That is a very easy domain to remember, iot.security. And that is it for this Soapbox special. If you are interested in doing one of these, you can email sales@risky.biz. So please do. We've got next month is booked, and I think we've got pretty clear availability, but there's a lot of interest. So, you know, like the weekly slots sell out a year in advance. I have a feeling this stuff is going to do the same thing. So I would get on that if you want to make sure that you can do one of these. Again, I do hope you've enjoyed this. Until next time, I've been Patrick Gray. Thanks for listening.